Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Globe Gazette for November 24th, 2021. I am your reader, Peter Welch. Turkey still available for a price. Prices for holiday staples have soared. Turkeys may not be able to fly very far, but their prices can soar, along with the costs of other holiday staples like cranberry sauce and pie filling. The Thanksgiving table hasn't been spared the price inflation that is rampant elsewhere in the economy because of strong consumer demand and labor shortages. The American Farm Bureau estimates that a Thanksgiving feast for 10, complete with sweet potatoes, rolls, a vegetable tray, and a pie with whipped cream, will cost $53.31 this year, up 14% from a year ago. It's an unusual spike. Before this year, the annual cost estimate had been falling since 2015. The inflation is real. Everybody is saying that. Everybody is feeling it, said Butterball President and CEO Jay Jandrain. Whether it's labor, transportation, packaging materials, energy to fuel the plants, everything costs more. North Carolina-based Butterball, which supplies around one-third of Thanksgiving turkeys, struggled to attract workers earlier this year, leading to processing delays. While turkeys waited, they grew bigger, adding to already skyrocketing costs for corn and soybean feed. But Jandrain said labor shortages have lessened, and the company was able to secure enough trucks to get its turkeys to grocery stores. So there will be about the same number of whole turkeys as last year, but fewer smaller birds. The good news about that is everybody loves the after Thanksgiving leftovers, and they're going to have more of them this year, Jandrain said. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the average wholesale price of an 8 to 16 pound frozen turkey in mid-November was $1.35 per pound, rather, up 21% from a year ago. For other staples, weather conditions compounded labor shortages. Pumpkin crops were smaller due to heavy rains, and a fungus in Illinois, a top supplier, and drought in California. In early November, fresh pumpkins were averaging $2.72 per pound, up 5% from a year ago, according to Nielsen IQ. Prices for green beans were up 4%, while canned cranberry sauce was up 2.5%. Ryan Bauer of Dallas, Texas, usually buys turkey a day or two after Thanksgiving to save money. But this year, she signed up for Ibotta, a receipt scanner app, which gave her a turkey, potatoes, corn, soup, gravy, cornbread from Walmart all free, just for signing up. If that hadn't come along, the plan was just to go to the woods with my wife and grill wieners, Bauer joked. Still, many retailers facing cost pressures of their own are pulling back on their usual Thanksgiving promotions. In the week before Thanksgiving, the number of U.S. stores offering specials on turkeys was at the lowest level since 2017, said Mark Jordan, the executive director of Leap Market Analytics, which follows the livestock and poultry markets. There will still be some discounts, but some of the extreme giveaways are going to be fewer and farther between, Jordan said. Diana Jepson, a retiree from West Hartford, Connecticut, said she usually pays about $1 per pound for her Thanksgiving turkey. This year, her 23-pound Butterball cost $1.50 per pound. But she still thinks that's a good value, especially compared to the recent price increases she has seen for beef and chicken. Jepson will celebrate Thanksgiving with 21 family members, including her 96-year-old mother. Her Cuban-American family bastes the turkey in a Mojo Crillo marinade. Jepson's husband, George Jepson, to former Attorney General of Connecticut, cooks the turkey following his mother-in-law's recipe. other staples they serve, including black beans and yuca, haven't increased in price, she said. Yepsen also got boxed stuffing on sale. We still think it's a good bargain to be able to serve that many people, she said. Higher turkey prices could persist into 2022, Gendrain said. Feed costs remain elevated along with labor and transportation costs. That could help the turkey business, however, which for years has faced faltering demand for parts like turkey breasts and deli meats. The industry slaughtered 159 million turkeys in the first 9 months of 2021, giving the U.S. its lowest per capita supply of turkey since 1987, Jordan said. Higher prices could encourage farmers to raise and slaughter more turkeys next year. For some shoppers, availability, not price, was the biggest concern this year. Lauren Knapp, an economist in Rochester, New York, bought two frozen turkeys on sale weeks earlier than she might have because she worried about shortages. Knapp and her partner plan to make a practice meal on Thanksgiving and a second meal for relatives in early December. Friends in D.C. were saying it would be a chicken Thanksgiving because they can't find turkey anywhere, said Knapp, who was relieved that turkeys were available, even though some items she buys, like low-sodium turkey slices for sandwiches, have been harder to come by this year. And in other news, Main Street Charles City celebrates anniversary. It became affiliated with Main Street America 25 years ago. Main Street Charles City is celebrating a milestone. Main Street Charles City marks its 25th anniversary in 2021, and over that time, the organization has played a key role in orchestrating the revival of the downtown community. But flashback 25 years ago, and Charles City's downtown shone in a much dimmer light than it does today, according to Mark Wicks, the Community Development Center for Main Street Charles City. A lot of people had the perception that the downtown was dead, Wick said, of the Charles City downtown 25 years ago. Now Charles City has a thriving downtown in Main Street. Charles City played a huge role in creating it. A lot of windows were boarded up in downtown. When I first started now, there's only one window boarded up, Wick said. It's one of the things I'm most proud of. Main Street Charles City has done this by initiating numerous projects in the community and maintaining a strong relationship with Main Street America. Main Street Charles City was established in conjunction with Main Street America, which helps downtown communities across the United States revitalize their downtowns. Main Street Charles City first started out in 1994, but didn't become affiliated with Main Street America until 1997. It was all about establishing a culture, Wick said. Being affiliated with them, Main Street America, helped. Main Street Charles City has also worked on a multitude of projects in an effort to transform the downtown into a vibrant and prospering community. We are committed to making downtown Charles City a better place to live and play, Wicks said. One project that stands out to Wicks is the effort made by volunteers to beautify the concrete planters that are situated in parking lots around the city. Those planters used to just be gross and filled with trash, Wicks said. Now, during the summer, they're filled with all sorts of flowers. It's really cool. Another project that comes to mind for Wicks is an art piece that was made as a tribute to the city's iconic suspension bridge, which collapsed following the catastrophic floods of 2008. The memorial sculpture was created using only pieces of the destroyed bridge. The $60,000 cost of the art project was funded by donations. All of the work that Main Street Charles has done has earned the organization some accolades along the way. Charles City has won America in Bloom's National Award, given to communities that showed substantial transformations to their downtowns, two times, and finished second in a third entry, Wix says that that reflects on the efforts from the entire Main Street Charles City group, which is entirely made up of volunteers. It shows that we want to make our community attractive and more green, Wix said. Our volunteers are a big part of that. Main Street Charles City had the chance to celebrate its 25th anniversary year during the final party in the park event in August, one of Main Street Charles City's premier events of the year. It was way fun, Wick said. A great way to celebrate. In other news, DoorDash delivers for food banks. App brings know-how for getting orders to those who need them. Susan Goodell needed help. In the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, Goodell, CEO of the El Paisones Fighting Hunger Food Bank, would look out the window at the long line of clients picking up the food available that day, while she and others answered calls from others who couldn't travel to a distribution point. We were getting just horrible phone calls from our seniors, from people with disabilities, people who were COVID positive and couldn't leave their homes to get food, Goodell said. We were distributing food here at the site and other sites from about 6 a.m. till about 7 at night. Then at the end of the day, the staff would pick up food and deliver it to people's houses. So earlier this year, when the food delivery service DoorDash approached the food bank offering help, Goodell was elated by the support, and demand quickly ramped up. The program in El Paso, Texas, now delivers 2,100 orders of food bank supplies each week, and there's a waiting list to join. It's just the result that DoorDash had intended. By offering its delivery platform technology to food banks for free, DoorDash, like a growing number of companies, is providing something that many nonprofits say is even more valuable than cash. Know-how. Corporate donations of non-cash, which includes a company's own products, services, and technology, grew to 22% of all community investments in 2020, according to the chief executive for Corporate Purchase, a coalition of business leaders. Over the past 5 years, the coalition says non-cash is the fastest growing segment of corporate giving. Corporations know that they have unique ways to leverage some of their value, says Carrie Niedfeld Thomas, a managing director of the group. During 2020, food banks distributed 6 billion meals in America. In 2021, they're serving about 55% more people than they did in 2020 before the pandemic, according to Feeding America. The increased demand is straining many food banks, a problem that is worsening as supply chain disruptions, diminished inventories, and labor shortages magnify food costs. Food banks have really had to rise to the occasion with innovating and definitely changing the way that they're engaging with their clients and the way that they're distributing food, said Brittany Grunke, DoorDash's general manager of government nonprofit. The company modified one of its existing programs, Project Dash, to help them out. Project Dash had emerged in 2017 from an idea that originated with employees who proposed it as a way to pick up excess food from restaurants and distribute it to community organizations. When COVID-19 hit, Grunke said DoorDash saw how much demand food banks across the country were facing and realized that Project Dash could be modified to help. DoorDash began reaching out to food banks across the country through Feeding America and was surprised by the intensity and ingenuity of the responses. Julie Yurko, Northern Illinois Food Bank CEO, said she recognized how DoorDash's technology could enhance its programs. DoorDash brought its technological expertise and platform for last mile delivery. Her food bank brought its online communication skills and the networks to connect people with the food they need. Just like that, Yurko said, the world changes for us. Previously, Northern Illinois Food Bank's My Pantry Express program was unavailable to its homebound clients because someone had to go to a collection point to pick up the food. But with DoorDash's technology, homebound clients can go to the My Pantry Express website and choose from the available food, including macaroni and cheese, cereals, potatoes, and apples on a recent day, just as shoppers do an Amazon Fresh or local supermarket site, and then schedule a time for delivery. There's so much dignity in not just being able to say yes to what I want, but also to say no to what I don't want, Yurko said. I can't tell you how many neighbors say, I don't want anything I can't see. There's somebody else who needs it. At this point, DoorDash provides the technology as well as the delivery people. The only cost that we incur is the cost of running the program, which is what we do anyway, Yurko said. That support is also making an impact nationally. DoorDash says Project Dash has made more than a million deliveries, the equivalent of about 21 million meals, in more than 900 cities across the United States and Canada. Is Kushi Stuckey, executive coordinator for the Food Bank of Delaware, said she reached out to DoorDash after reading about its program and was pleasantly surprised when the company responded with help. Her food bank had managed to deliver to homebound clients only once a week. Project Dash enabled her to get food to emergency cases. I was getting a lot of phone calls from people saying, I need food today. I'm hungry today, Stuckey said. Nobody should have to wait a week just to get food delivery. Stuckey was heartened by her ability to use the system to help an older woman who had called the food bank after returning home from spinal surgery. She was unable to go to the store and didn't know how to use the internet to order groceries to her home. Stuckey checked the woman's address, found that she was eligible for the food bank's program. I was like, we can get you delivery in about an hour, Stuckey said. She was really excited, and she got her delivery. And let's take a look at today in history. Today is Wednesday, November 24th, the 328th day of 2021. There are 37 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On November 24th, 1963, Jack Ruby shot and mortally wounded Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of President John F. Kennedy, in a scene captured on live television. On this date, in 1859, British naturalist Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species, which explained his theory of evolution by means of natural selection. In 1941, the U.S. Supreme Court in Edwards versus California unanimously struck down a California law prohibiting people from bringing impoverished non-residents into the state. In 1947, a group of writers, producers, directors that became known as the Hollywood Ten was cited for contempt of Congress for refusing to answer questions about alleged communist influence in the movie industry. John Steinbeck's novel, The Pearl, was first published. And in 1950, the musical Guys and Dolls, based on the writings of Damon Runyon and featured songs by Frank Loesser, opened on Broadway. In 1971, a hijack calling himself Dan Cooper, but better known as the D.B. Cooper, parachuted from a Northwest Orient Airlines 727 over the Pacific Northwest after receiving $200,000 in ransom. His fate remains unknown. In 1974, the bone fragments of a 3.2 million-year-old hominid were discovered by scientists in Ethiopia. The skeletal remains were named Lucy. And have you got a tip that you'd like to share? We're committed to reporting stories in that help our readers connect with their community, especially breaking news and matters of public safety. If you see news we should report, please consider becoming a part of North Iowa's local journalism efforts. The Globe Gazette has developed a faster, easier way for you to submit a news tip or story idea. you'll find a new link on our website's navigation menu labeled News Tip. Tapping that link from your smartphone, tablet, or computer launches a short form that allows you to send news tips or story ideas directly to our editors. The news tip form requires you to submit a phone number and email address. We will not publish that information, but it will help our editors verify the news tip or seek additional information. News tips cannot be submitted anonymously. Also, we cannot guarantee news coverage on every tip or story idea. The news tip feature is not for press releases, letters to the editor, obituaries, or advertising. Please use the normal channels for that content. Also, readers may continue to contact journalists directly by phone or email. News tip is just an additional way for you to communicate with us. And in shopping, 28 Black Friday deals, what major retailers have in store for this year's sales. There's a great haze hanging over Black Friday shopping in 2021, and it's not induced by the usual Thanksgiving dinner turkey coma. The fog is from the dozens and dozens of full cargo ships yet to be offloaded at the nation's largest shipping ports. Gift shopping this holiday season will be seriously hobbled by a struggling supply chain and overall prices rising due to inflation. We've seen shipping delays before, but supply chain issues in the past were more specific to a handful of items, says smart shopping expert The Bodge of True Trey. This is more of a widespread issue, so I think shoppers will be surprised by how difficult it will be to get certain gifts. But that doesn't close the door on promotions tied to the day after Thanksgiving that we've come to know as Black Friday. Despite higher prices overall, Black Friday definitely isn't canceled, says Nathan Burrow, senior deals expert at the New York Times Wirecutter. It's still a time where you can save, so long as you shop strategically. Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and Cyber Mondays are more or less all part of a continuous sale. And though we have noted a trend of retailers closing their brick and mortar locations for the Thanksgiving holiday proper, online storefronts will be available throughout. Here are 28 Black Friday deals and doorbusters, some available right now. Amazon, the e-commerce giant, deeply discounts its proprietary smart home products. Smart devices with Alexa built in, such as Kindle readers, etc., around the holidays. For example, the Alexa-enabled Echo Show 5, second generation, is 43% off. The 50-inch Amazon Fire TV 4 series is 30% off. And Fire TV Stick 4K is 50% off. Surprisingly, you can pick a pair of the red-hot new AirPods Pro with MagSafe charging for $200, a $50 saving. Robotic vacuums and air fryers will be a thing this year, and Amazon has the iRobot Roomba 692 for $200, a $100 savings. A Ninja Air Fryer AF101 is selling for $90, down from $120. At Best Buy, Best Buy dropped its Black Friday deals early. And as you can guess, it's loaded with bargains on TVs, including a Samsung 75-inch Class 7 Series LED 4K UHD Smart TV for $850. That's $250 savings, and a Sony 55-inch Bravo OLED 4K UHD Smart Google TV for $1,400, a $400 savings. Also on Best Buy's Black Friday list is an Apple 21.5-inch Mac with Retina 4K display for $1,000, a $500 savings. Bose Quiet Comfort Headphones for $279 is a $50 savings. A Keurig Limited Edition Jonathan Adler K Mini Single Serve K Cup Pod Coffee Maker for $50, a $50 savings, and a Mr. Christmas 7.5-foot Alexa-enabled pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for $400, a $100 savings. If you go to Costco, the warehouse power giant on Black Friday has savings on lots of electronics, and you can always find savings with Costco's private label Kirkland Signature lineup of goods, and you'll find those on Black Friday on many items, including chocolate-covered almonds as well as organic tortilla chips. But first note, you'll still have to have a Costco membership starting at $60 to shop the deals online and in warehouses. For Black Friday 2021, Costco is featuring a Samsung 32-inch class FHD curved monitor for $200, which is a $50 savings, a Conair Turbo Extreme Steam handheld fabric steamer for $35, a $15 savings, an HP touchscreen laptop for $500, a $100 savings, and a NutriBullet blender combo for $70, which is a $30 savings. Home Depot also has a number of different deals, and those include Samsung French door refrigerator for $1,298, which is a $700 savings. Also, you have a Duet cordless drill driver set for $99, a $60 savings, and a stainless steel Samsung dishwasher for $498, an $81 savings. In some others, Lowe's has a number of different things. Lowe's is dealing a 28.2 cubic foot Samsung French door fridge for $1,300, which is down from $2,000, and a Manna top load washer for $494, down from $600. Walmart has a number of different items. A 70-inch 4K OMN smart TV with Roku. OMN is Walmart's house brand. $109 for an Apple Watch Series 3 GPS, down from $199 to $69 for Power XL 12 quart 6-inch one air fryer oven for $299, or an Xbox Series S game console and $14 to $25 for special buy select video games. Note all of these deals are available online now, and that's from 5 a.m. in the store on through on Black Friday. And in other news, in agriculture, sheep, bees, and crops, solar developers tout multiple benefits of renewable energy source. Silkflower is among the native plants that blanketed the vast North American prairie until settlers developed farms and cities, nowadays confined largely to roadsides and ditches. The long-stemmed cousin of the sunflower may be poised for a comeback thanks to solar energy. Researchers are growing silkflower at 9 solar installations in the Minneapolis area, testing its potential as an oiled seed crop. The deep-rooted perennial also offers forage for livestock and desperately needed habitat for bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds. We need a lot of plots spaced pretty far apart to measure silkflower's effects on pollinators, said crop scientist Ebony Murrell of the Land Institute, a research nonprofit. The solar industry is interested in restoring pollinator habitats. This seemed to be a good partnership. Solar is a renewable energy source that can help wean the world off fossil fuels that produce greenhouse gases, but it also can benefit the environment and economy in ways not as well known. As the industry grows, solar arrays will sprawl across millions of acres, wasting farmland, critics say. But advocates see opportunities to diversify crop production and boost landowner income while repairing ecological damage to ground plowed under or paved over. There's a lot of spaces where solar could be integrated with really innovative uses of land, says Brendan O'Neill, a University of Michigan environmental scientist who's monitoring how planting at a new 1,752-panel facility in Cadillac, Michigan, stores carbon. Elsewhere, solar installations host sheep that reduce need for mowing. And researchers are experimenting with crop growing beneath solar panels while examining other potential upsides, preventing soil erosion and conserving and cleansing water. at Cascadilla Community Solar Farm in upstate New York. Sheep munch grasses among solar panels, while bees and butterflies collect pollen from native flowers. Cornell University researcher Nico Kochendorfer says initial data from her three-year study shows light grazing producers abundant bees and wildflowers while keeping plants from shading panels. Some rare bee species are turning up. Farmers are getting $300 to $550 per acre yearly to graze sheep at solar sites, increasing farm income while sparing them the cost of renting or buying pasture, said Kochendorfer, who owns about 400 sheep with her fiancé, Louis Fox. Grazing is less expensive than traditional site management, she said. Fox has sheep at solar sites from southern Pennsylvania to Vermont. Certain times of the year, the sites will be like a butterfly house in a zoo. There's just butterflies everywhere, he said. Sheep are feeding at solar installations in more than 20 states, said Lexi Haim, director of the American Solar Grazing Association and Fox's business partner. It's also happening in the United Kingdom and other parts of Europe, Uruguay, and Australia. Vegetables and solar shade. In Longmont, Colorado, Jack's Solar Farm offers another example of solar meeting agriculture. Instead of wheat and hay, as before, the farm's 24-acre hosts 3,276 panels, generating enough power for about 300 homes. Beneath them grow tomatoes, squash, kale, and green beans. Researchers are comparing vegetables grown under panels 6 or 8 feet off the ground with others in open sunlight. Results were mixed during the recently concluded initial season, but shaded plants appeared to have a longer growing season. We don't have to leave the soil underneath our solar panels across our country denuded or just left to weeds, owner Byron Komenek said. Elevating the panels a little bit more provides agricultural jobs as well as an opportunity to do more with the land. There are no obituary news items today, so we're going to move on with more news. Inflation rising at red-hot pace. Experts see it lasting well into next year. Inflation is starting to look like that unexpected and unwanted house guest who just won't leave. For months, many economists had sounded a reassuring message that a spike in consumer prices, something that had been missing in action in the U.S. for a generation, wouldn't stay long. It would prove transitory, in the soothing words of Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell and White House officials, as the economy shifted from virus-related chaos to something closer to normalcy. Yet, as any American who has bought a carton of milk, a gallon of gas, or a used car could tell you, inflation has settled in, and economists are now voicing a more discouraging message. Higher prices will likely last well into next year, if not beyond. On Wednesday, the government said its consumer price index soared 6.2% from a year ago, the biggest 12-month jump since 1990. It's a large blow against the transitory narrative, said Jason Furman, who served as the top economic advisor in the Obama administration. Inflation is not slowing. It's maintaining a red-hot pace, and the sticker shock is hitting where families tend to feel it most. At the breakfast table, for instance, bacon prices are up 20% over last year, egg prices nearly 12%. Inflation also has hit people trying to bring groceries home. Gasoline has surged 50%, used cars 26% or more. Although pay is up sharply for many workers, it isn't nearly enough to keep up with prices. Last month, average hourly wages in the U.S., after accounting for inflation, actually fell 1.2% compared with October 2020. Economists at Wells Fargo joke grimly that the Labor Department's CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index, should stand for Consumer Pain Index. Unfortunately for consumers, especially lower-wage households, It's all coinciding with their higher spending needs right before the holiday season. The price squeeze is escalating pressure on the Fed to shift more quickly away from years of easy money policies, and it poses a threat to President Joe Biden's congressional Democrats and their ambitious spending plans. What caused the price spikes? Much of it is from the flip side of very good news. Slammed by COVID-19, the U.S. economy collapsed in the spring of 2020 as lockdowns took effect. Businesses closed or cut hours, and consumers stayed home as a health precaution. Employers slashed 22 million jobs. Economic output plunged at a record-shattering 31% annual rate in last year's April to June quarter. Everyone braced for more misery. Companies cut investment. Restocking was put off. And a brutal recession ensued. Yet instead of sinking into a prolonged downturn, the economy staged an unexpectedly rousing recovery, fueled by massive government spending and a bevy of emergency moves by the Fed. By spring, the rollout of vaccines had emboldened consumers to return to restaurants, bars, and shops. Suddenly, businesses had to scramble to meet demand. They couldn't hire fast enough to plug job openings, a near record 10.4 million in August, or buy enough supplies to fill customer orders. As business roared back, ports and freight yards couldn't handle the traffic. Global supply chains became snarled. Costs rose, and companies found that they could pass along those higher costs in the form of higher prices to consumers, many of whom had managed to sock away a ton of savings during the pandemic. A sizable chunk of the inflation we're seeing is the inevitable result of coming out of the pandemic, said Furman, now an economist at the Harvard Kennedy School. Furman suggested, though, that misguided policy played a role too. Policymakers were so intent on staving off an economic collapse that they systematically underestimated inflation, he said. They poured kerosene onto the fire. A flood of government spending, including President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package, with its $1,400 check to most households in March, overstimulated the economy, Furman said. Inflation is a lot higher in the United States than it is in Europe, he noted. Europe is going through the same supply shocks as the U.S. is, the same supply chain issues, but they didn't do nearly as much stimulus. In a statement Wednesday, Biden acknowledged that inflation hurts Americans' pocketbooks, and reversing this trend is a top priority for me. But he said his $1 trillion infrastructure package, including spending on roads, bridges, and ports, would help ease supply bottlenecks. So, how long will it last? Consumer price inflation will likely endure as long as companies struggle to keep up with consumers' prodigious demand for goods and services. A resurgent job market, employers have added about 5.8 million jobs this year. That means that Americans can continue to splurge on everything from lawn furniture to new cars, and the supply chain bottlenecks show no sign of clearing. The demand side of the U.S. economy will continue to be something to behold, says Rick Reeder, Chief Investment Officer for Global Fixed Income at BlackRock, and companies will continue to have the luxury of passing on prices. Megan Green, Chief Economist at the Kroll Institute, suggested that inflation and the overall economy will eventually return to something closer to normal. I think it will be transitory, she said of inflation, but economists have to be very honest about defining transitory, and I think this could last, well, another year easily. We need a lot of humility talking about how long this lasts, Furman said. I think it's with us for a while. The inflation rate is going to come down from this year's blistering pace, but it's still going to be very, very high compared to the historical norms we have been used to. Will we suffer a return of 1970-style stagflation? The run-ups in consumer prices has raised the specter of a return to the stagflation of the 1970s. That was when higher prices coincided with high unemployment, in defiance of what conventional economists thought was possible. Yet today's situation looks very different. Unemployment is relatively low, and households overall are in good shape financially. The Conference Board, a business research group, found that consumers' inflation expectations last month were the highest they'd been since July 2008. But consumers didn't seem all that worried. The board's confidence index rose anyway on optimism about the job market. For the time being, at least they feel that the benefits are outweighing the negatives, said Lynn Franco, the Conference Board's Senior Director of Economic Indicators. Economic growth, after slowing from July through September in response to the highly contagious Delta variant, is thought to be bouncing back in the final quarter of 2021. Most economists are expecting growth to accelerate in the fourth quarter, Green said. So it doesn't suggest that we are facing both a tanking of growth and higher inflation. We're just facing higher inflation. What should policymakers do? The pressure is on the Fed, which is charged with keeping a lid on inflation to control prices. They need to stop telling us that inflation is transitory, start becoming more worried about inflation, then act in a manner consistent with being worried, Furman said. We've seen a little bit of that, but only a little bit. Powell has announced that the Fed will start reducing the monthly bond purchase it began last year as an emergency measure to try to boost the economy. In September, Fed officials also forecast that they would raise the Fed's benchmark interest rate from its record low near zero by the end of 2022, much earlier than they predicted a few months earlier. But sharply higher inflation, should it persist, might compel the Fed to accelerate that timetable. Investors expect at least two Fed rate hikes next year. And now let's turn to Globe Gazette Sports. Trying to be a legend, Jefferson proves his worth to the Vikings. Justin Jefferson wore a Randy Moss t-shirt in warm-ups on Sunday, proof that Minnesota's great appreciates history. Remember, Prince wore a ruffled shirt just like Jimi Hendrix. Jefferson dressed for success, then undressed the Packers' secondary in a performance that made you wonder if the Vikings have another receiver running a fly route toward the Hall of Fame Sunday in one of those games that gives you night sweats during the day. Jefferson caught 8 passes for 169 yards and 2 touchdowns as the Vikings beat Green Bay 34-31 at U.S. Bank Stadium. Jefferson has proven that he is the Vikings' best player. He has proven that their offenses is at its best when he is their primary target. He has proven that good things happen when Rick Spielman uses his first-round pick on something other than a cornerback. And he has also proven that if Kirk Cousins keeps throwing him the ball, the Vikings are a far better team than they seemed to be 3 weeks ago, when the soundtrack to the season was the grumbling of underused receivers. That's the mindset I have, Jefferson said. When asked about the Moss t-shirt, just trying to be a legend, trying to make big plays. Why not carry after him? He's one of the best in the game, and I just love playing this game. I love the rivalry. Love these intense big games. It's what I live for. Vikings coach Mike Zimmer said he heard Jefferson say as much during the week. After the game, he tells me, "I told you, I got you, coach," Zimmer said. "That's the kind of guy you want to have. He's a great competitor, runs great routes. The word great is as overused as emojis these days, but when Cousins throws the ball in Jefferson's direction, it's not incorrect. Jefferson has played 26 NFL games. His totals, 151 catches, 2,344 yards, and 13 touchdowns. Moss, after 26 NFL games, had 122 catches for 2,161 yards and 23 touchdowns. This year in the Vikings' five losses, Jefferson has caught 22 passes for 310 yards. In their five victories, he has caught 41 passes for 634 yards. Rushing yards can appear correlated to victories because a team with a lead is more likely to run the ball. Receiving yards can be deceiving because a team losing by 20 points is more likely to pick up meaningless completions. That the Vikings win when Jefferson is targeted is the key statistic of their season and perhaps their immediate future, and is proof that fans and receivers complaining about his usage were right. Jefferson is almost always open, and the one time Cousins forced a pass to him on Sunday, Jefferson may have made his best play. With a 2 minute 8 seconds left in the game, the Vikings had the ball on their own 30. Cousins threw a pass to Jefferson deep down the right sideline. Packers safety Darnell Savage cuts in front of Jefferson and caught it. As he fell, Jefferson hacked at his arm, and Savage lost his grip. The officials on the field called it an interception. Replays ruled it an incompletion. Jefferson caught a 6-yard pass on the next play, and the Vikings drove down the field to set up Greg Joseph's winning field goal as time expired. On October 31st, the Vikings began a daunting 4-game stretch by losing to Dallas. Jefferson had 2 catches for 21 yards. The next week, he had 3 catches for 69 yards in a loss at Baltimore. The last 2 weeks, the Vikings have beaten 2 contenders as Jefferson has caught 17 passes for 312 yards. Last year, the Vikings ran their offense through Dalvin Cook and finished 7-9. If they're going to continue their recent surge toward the playoffs, they need to realize that throwing downfield to Jefferson creates space and ease for his teammates. Running lanes for Cook underneath routes for Adam Thielen, copious yards for Cousins. Moss introduced himself to the Packers rivalry on a rainy Monday night in Lambeau Field. Jefferson belated insinuated himself into Minnesota's defining rivalry in U.S. Bank Stadium on Sunday. Don't be surprised if the next time you see Moss on TV, he's wearing a T-shirt that reads Jefferson. And in other sports, Chamberlain sets NBA scoring record. Wilt the Stilt scored 100 points, a mark that still stands. In Hershey, Pennsylvania, Wilt Chamberlain set an NBA record that still stands by scoring 100 points as he helped the Philadelphia Warriors beat the New York Knicks 169-147 in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Chamberlain had 23 points at the end of the first quarter, 41 at halftime, and 69 at the end of the third. He served his best for last, dropping 31 in the final period. He made 36 of 63 field goals and 28 of 32 free throws. As part of its coverage of the NBA and its 75th season, the Associated Press is republishing verbatim the story on Chamberlain's game on March 2, 1962. It's a record. I'd hate to try to break myself, says Philadelphia's Wilt Chamberlain, eyeing his new 100-point National Basketball Association single-game record. Chamberlain's mark, eclipsing his own record of 78, came last night as the Warriors defeated the New York Knickerbockers 169-147. The total points scored, 316, also set an NBA record in a night just made for rewriting the NBA's record columns. The previous high was 312, scored by Boston, 173, and Minneapolis, 139. When Chamberlain scored the 78 earlier this year in a triple overtime against LA, coach Frank McGuire predicted someday he will hit 100. The 7-foot-1 giant lived up to the prophecy as he scored 36 field goals and 28 of 32 foul shots, both NBA records. He also scored 31 points in the final quarter and scored 59 points in the first half, both records. The 36 goals were made on 63 tries for 57%. I wasn't even thinking of hitting 100, but after putting in 9 straight free throws, I was thinking about a foul shooting record, he said. It was my greatest game, he added. McGuire agreed. It has to be the greatest game of his career. Chamberlain scored again and again on his fallaway shot as the excited crowd of 4,124 shrieked, "Give it to it, Wilt! Give it to it, Wilt!" His teammates complied. The team made all the difference. It would have been impossible to score this many if they hadn't kept feeding me, said Chamberlain. When he hit 100 on a dunk shot with 46 seconds left, the fans streamed out onto the court to mob him. The game was held up until the floor was cleared. Coach McGuire cheered the Stilts' foul shooting. It was phenomenal. Chamberlain himself said, "My foul shooting was vastly improved. That made a big difference." Chamberlain's approaching a 4,000-point single season is the fourth player to ever reach 100 points in a basketball game. The others were in college games. And in other sports, baseball, another shot at Cooperstown. Golden Era Committee set to re-examine credentials of 10 of baseball's former stars. A committee of 16 Hall of Fame players, managers, and executives will assemble at the beginning of December in Orlando to debate the worthiness of 10 former players from the golden era of baseball, the 1950s through the 1960s, for long-awaited plaques in Cooperstown. Result will be announced December 5th. For Brooklyn fan favorite Gil Hodges, this will be his 20th turn at bat with various veterans committees after failing to reach the necessary 75% needed for election in 15 years on the Baseball Writers Association ballot. The highest percentage he ever achieved with the writers was 63.4 in his last year on the ballot, and his 3,010 votes in 15 years from the writers are the most of any player not elected to the Hall of Fame. Minnie Minoso, Jim Catt, Tony Oliva, and Dick Allen, the other leading candidates on the 10-player ballot, each have been on 5 or more Veterans Committee ballots. Full disclosure here, I was formerly a member of the Historical Review Committee that made up this ballot, and in terms of selecting 10 players for which you could make a legitimate Hall of Fame case, I think we met that objective. At the same time, being as I don't have any further vote on them, I feel free to offer my views on whether they belong in the Hall or not. My first and foremost criteria for the Hall of Fame always has been dominance. Did this player dominate in the game for a substantial period of time? And the best benchmark in that regard is the amount of bold face, as denotes lead league, in his record. This is my opinion, is where Hodges falls short, and is probably the reason he has been rejected so many times by the Hall of Fame voters. In 18 years in the big leagues, he never once led the league in any offensive category. His supporters will note that he drove in 100 or more runs 7 straight seasons from 1949 to 1955, but that also while hitting 5th or 6th in arguably one of the greatest lineups of all time, with 3 Hall of Famers, Duke Snyder, Roy Campanella, and Pee Wee Reese, plus a lifetime of .300, actually .299, hitter in Carl Fiorillo, mostly all hitting ahead of him. He obviously gets big points for managing the Mets to their Miracle World Championship in 1969, but his overall managing record was 660 to 753, with no other first place or even second place finishes. Another benchmark I always have had for position players other than catchers, though it's not entirely hard and fast. It's 2,000 hits, and in that, two, Hodges' 1,921 falls short. By contrast, Olivia, 1,917, also didn't attain 2,000 hits in a career cut short by injuries. But his 10 prime seasons with the Twins from 1964 to 1975 were loaded with boldface, as in three batting titles, five times leading the American League in hits, four times in doubles, and once each in runs and total bases. I'd say that's pretty dominant. And that does it for today's reading of the Globe Gazette for November 24th, 2021. I'm your reader, Peter Welch. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.